Hello, fellow human being on the opposite end of the screen. I'm Dylan, and welcome to the Existential Delight Podcast. So happy to have you here. This is episode 14, and today my guest is Dash Rendar. He is the man behind Garnish and Gains, a TikTok account which boasts over 7 million likes, with over 300,000 following his content. Speaking of which, his content focuses on archery and medieval weaponry in a more general sense. Dash is also a fan of medieval history and fantasy. There are three themes to our conversation: fitness, fantasy, and fatherhood. If you want to know what Dash's daily routine is like, how he maintains his incredible physique while being a father of three sons, what advice he would give to new fathers, what his opinion is on video games, how he overcomes resistance and gets himself in the gym and up early, and much, much more, then you will definitely want to keep listening, because we cover all of this. Now, before we jump into it, a quick word from our sponsor, hooksounds.com. If you are a creator like myself, and you've grown frustrated and tired of having videos you've worked really hard on demonetized because you used a song which might have claimed to be Creative Commons usage, but actually ended up violating copyright restrictions, and you just are tired of not being able to lift your projects up to the level you want because you can't find the right song, well then, my friends, Hook Sounds is the solution to your problem. For only $14.99 a month, you get a premium subscription, which gives you unlimited access to the full and ever-growing Hook Sounds library. And if $14.99 is just out of your price range, you can use the promo code DYLAN10, that's DYLAN10, DYLAN10 at checkout, and then you'll get an extra 10% off any subscription deal, just for being a listener of Existential Delight. So sign up to Hook Sounds today and take your podcast, your channel, or your project from amateur to professional. This is a great investment in your work, so what are you waiting for? The link is in the description. Hooksounds.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is my conversation with Dash Rendar.
Man, you look at the sky. All the stars, man, the stars are beautiful tonight.
Dash, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. Thank you for making the time.
Happy to do it. Thanks for reaching out to me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, I just wanted to talk to you because I've been following your stuff online, Garnish and Gains, your online work, and I find your content very inspiring, as we'll get into today. And I thought it would actually be so great to talk to you because you kind of cover a lot of different themes with the work you create online. So I'd love to just kind of start off with that topic itself and just ask you, in terms of the content, like if you met somebody at a, you know, you in your private life, you meet somebody and they ask you, what do you do? And, you know, it comes up that you create these videos. How would you describe the content that you make?
I mean, I'd say like the basis for it, it all is based in nerdy video games, start fantasy, right? And then, so it all kind of stems from that. Everything I do, whether it's cooking, whether it's exercise, whether it's anything, I like to ground it in the things that I enjoy most. And that's going to be the medieval type fantasy genre. And so it's kind of, I would just call it like a nerdy archery / fitness. Like it's a little amalgamation of everything, but I would say fitness, fantasy, archery, you know, kind of thing.
Okay, cool. Did you just wake up one day and decide to start uploading to TikTok, or did somebody give you advice to do it?
No, actually. So what started it as, honestly, was I lost a lot of weight, and I would find ways to make really creative recipes that were low calorie and would be filling and would help me stay lean. And my wife was like, these are really good and they taste, you should do a video about it. So I actually started, like, my first video, I think, was like a cooking one. And then I did one video, which was just like me pulling a bow in my garage, just training. And that, like, just absolutely just exploded. And it was like, what on earth? And so then I was just like, kind of emboldened me to do stuff that I like more, because cooking is cool, but archery, and that's something I enjoy much more. And so I started doing more archery videos, and that resonated a lot with people. And so I was able to kind of make videos into something that I already like to do, right? That's the thing I've always kind of said, is if this ever feels like I'm having to think of content or create something that's making me, like, giving me angst, and it's like, oh my gosh, I have to create this video and think of something fun, it's like, you know, that's just not an interest to me. I have enough going on in life. But if I can film stuff that I was going to do, or it's just part of my day or my routine or my fun, then I love to do it and share it and just spend a little time editing it, of course.
Yeah. So are you very much a one-man team?
Yeah. No, I don't have any. Yeah. It's just me and a tripod. And then I use like CapCut or something like that. So it's all just stuff that I just edit on my own just real quick. And that's it.
Listen, man, I was using Sony Vegas to edit for a long time. Wow. And then I recently upgraded my computer, and I decided to just use CapCut in the meantime. And I kind of fell in love with it. It's pretty good, impressive. It's good. For free software. Yeah. It's really good. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting that I'm sure you get the sense that I don't want to say like you've created a monster, but this thing has probably grown so much more than you initially thought it would. Do you ever kind of sit back and just go, wow, I've got, like, I think, what is it, over 200 million views or something?
Oh, I have no idea. Like, it's like, I don't, like, and that's the thing too, is like, it feels so surreal, in the sense where it's not part of my daily life. Right. Yeah. Like, I spend a fair amount of time commenting, engaging. Right. Because I try to, like, if people are interested in it, I love to shoot. That's the most fun to me, is if someone has, like, enjoys what I do and they want to comment on it and everything. I enjoy doing that. So that takes the most of the time. But as far as, like, the amount of views I have or anything like that, it's really just, you know, I've never taken the time to really look. I just kind of enjoy doing what I do, you know, and it's just, like, fun to share the hobby. So I don't really feel like it's created a monster or anything. You know, it's different than I would have anticipated. But it doesn't feel like any sort of celebrity or anything like that, right? It's just, it's so far removed from what I would consider that to be.
Yeah. In a way, the internet kind of makes celebrities of everyone in a weird way, like micro celebrities. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get people that might recognize you. Say, hey, I know you. But I think the fact that you don't do it for that reason is likely why it's so successful. Because I don't know if you've heard that expression, that the man who loves walking will walk further than the man who loves the destination. So, you know, so the guy who just makes the content because it's what you are already doing and you just happen to be filming it. No one could really compete with you at that, because that's something that you just love to do. So it doesn't feel like work. Yeah. Whereas if someone's doing it for work, they'll just fall behind eventually. Not to phrase it like a race, but I think you get my point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And it's like, I know that, like, I'm still like, I'm on Instagram and TikTok, but I don't watch Instagram or TikTok. Like, I don't really, there's a few people that I kind of got friends with, but that's just like other archers or people that have a similar vision to me, just wanting to, you know, share what they love and help people in some way. But it's, I've never, like, I don't want to trend chase, you know, I'm not trying to do a dance or anything. It's like, I just want to do what I enjoy. And if people engage with it, that's super great. But I never have to feel like I'm chasing down something or becoming something I'm not. It's like I'm completely stubborn in that way where it's like, this is what I want to do. And if people like it, great. If not, then, you know, no big deal. I'm still going to have fun doing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you've mentioned archery a few times. I'm curious, and I'd like to maybe delve into that a little bit. How did you get into archery? How did that love develop?
The first love for it was, I think in junior high, there was 1 week I got super sick and I had the flu for like a week and I stayed home and I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And so I'm 37 now. So this was pre-movies. And so I read through the whole thing and I just really fell in love with the concept. And then a few years later, I just kind of, well, not even a few years, but I started off with just like a 35-pound laminate cheap bow. But in the real world too, I'm very, I'm not super social, I guess you could say. I tended to always keep to myself. And so I never actually had any sort of training or never went to an archery class or anything like that. It was just something I wanted to do. So I loved the medieval fantasy thing, but I felt like a lot of stuff that was in that world for, like, you know, people who LARP or go to Ren Fairs or do the HEMA or the sword arts, like that's around people. And I'm like, even though it's all over the internet, in person to person, like I keep my nerdiness very quiet, I guess you could say. And so I think if you met me on the street necessarily, you wouldn't, you know, I'm kind of a socially awkward person as a whole. So everything I did was kind of me just wanting to do it on my own, but also not have to talk to other people, so to speak. So that was just a thing I could do by myself and try to get better at on my own.
What was it about archery? Could you pin it down to something specific about the art of it that you fell in love with?
So I think that to me, it was just a great representation of skill and strength. And so even when I was younger, my goal was always to be able to do what the historical estimates are for the English archers, 150 upwards to 178 pounds a draw. And so I was always active as well. And it, to me, was just like, it's like a strength goal, but just like a historical passion goal to like, can I do what the people of old did? Even though I didn't start from youth, that was just kind of like a drive for me. Like, I want to see if I can do what they did. And what that feels like to be able to pull back 150, 170 pounds on a bow, how much that's going to take and how much time and discipline. And so I'm good with like regiments and I just fixated on that. And so it kind of gave it, I think, extra life because it's not just the archery thing. It's also the end destination for the strength or goal because you can get more accurate and everything. And that's not, I mean, that's hard, but for me, it was like, I want to keep climbing and see if I can match what was done in the olden times, or the estimates at least.
Wow. It just struck me that you mentioned you keep your nerdiness pretty private. When you have visitors to your home, are they surprised to see your Roman armor?
so yeah, all my collection there.
Yeah, very subtle.
Yes. Well, I think I don't have a lot of visitors over, and usually when they do, it's just like our kids' parents and friends. I have like one really close friend, and that's like it.
Okay, I see.
And so, without giving the names, the actual story behind that is I convinced my wife each of our sons is named after a historical figure, and so I built up each of those to represent each of my sons' namesake. So I have that, and I kind of try to take a picture with them in front of it every year to see as they're growing and stuff. And so that was kind of like the goal behind it was, and I build those over years, like they're expensive. So I build a piece at a time. So, you know, it's like, I get a piece for Christmas or a piece for my birthday or something. And then that was just kind of built out over the years.
Is one of the end goals for them to actually wear it when they get to the right age?
I mean, if they want to try, they certainly can. It's completely up to them. I don't know if they're going to be on board. And then, of course, when they get established, I would offer it to them if they want to have it in their house. But that, of course, depends if they're you know, their wife, their significant other is okay with that. So that would be it. But I would like it, I think, just to be here because as they're gone and grown, I think that's a good way for me to just kind of have that representation of them as a presence because they're going to go and sow their own oats one day. So it'll you know, just something to remember them by in addition to photos and stuff.
I think that's really cool, man. That's awesome. I don't think I've ever seen something like that, like a representation of your boys in that way.
Yeah,
but really, really cool. Okay, so pleasure. I'd like to know, if you don't mind, on some of your TikToks, I'm sometimes shocked at how early you get up. If I remember correctly,
yeah.
Could you maybe kind of give me a rough overview of what like an average day is like in terms of fitness, in terms of exercise, in terms of archery? Like, how do you fit all that in? Because being a dad myself, I know that the early morning hours are like the golden hours. It's really the time the ultimate time you have. How do you go about managing that time throughout the day?
So I basically know, it all kind of started, I guess. I was an early-ish riser, but then my wife and I, we had three kids basically like back to back to back. So right now they're 6'5", 4" is wow. their age group. And there was a period of time, and we wanted to do it, just rip it off like a Band-Aid. I'd rather not sleep for 3 years or 4 years and relearn it all. And so after a couple of years, sleep just literally lost sense. Like there's no sleep meant nothing anymore, right? Mm. You're literally just moving. And so I kind of got to the point where I could wake up any time of the day. And so I just knew that if I wanted to do stuff that I wanted for myself, I have to get up early. So I go to bed by 9 most all nights. And when I go to bed, it's basically almost instantly asleep. My wife almost gets mad at me because she's like, literally my head hits the pillow, toast.
Yes.
Yes. And then I wake up generally Monday through Friday. I wake up at 3 in the morning. I go downstairs and I have a trainer in the garage. It's a smart trainer. And I do an hour to an hour and 15 minutes of pretty intense cycling. Cycling is another passion I have. And just doing like time trials type stuff. I'm not like a long distance cyclist. I'm, you know, a little heavier than a climber, but I like to do that. So it's basically like heart rate is, you know, 140 to 160 for like an hour. So it's very intensive type exercise. I get done around 4:15 and then I'll go to the gym. I spend about an hour at the gym and then I get home at about 5:40 at the latest. Because the youngest usually wakes up around 5:50, 6 o'clock. And so once he's awake, then I bring him downstairs and then they just kind of slowly shuffle down the stairs and I get them all set for the day. And I like to try to let my wife sleep in as well, as much as she can, because I'm up early. So there's no reason everyone has to be up early. And so then I just kind of take it over and then she comes downstairs after she wakes up as well. So that's my window. And then for the archery, generally, I just try to film as much as I can in one day on like a Saturday. Usually I'll have like the boys out there or something. They're just in the background most of the time. Sometimes you hear them yelling as I'm doing it. But it's all done generally in like a day. And if I want to shoot, you know, just during the week, I don't usually film it because I don't. It's just training. But I just try to have like 6 or 7 ideas in my head. I'm like, I want to try to do this, 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 and this. And then I'll just space it out as the week goes on and see which ones, see what ideas, you know, fleshed out well if I edit it.
Okay, fascinating. Do you feel like I wanted to ask you how your day is if you somehow miss your morning routine, but it sounds like that's pretty much a staple. Like it's not something you would just sleep through, right?
Right. No. And honestly, there's days where I don't even set my alarm. Like, and I'm just awake at close to 2:33. Like my body is just, the latest I can sleep in is like 4:45 probably. And then I'm awake and then I'm like, well, I don't have time to go to the gym, but I'll do the trainer. And I like the cardio way more than the gym anyways. To me, lifting weights is arduous and boring. I honestly hate it. But I do it just because I want to try as I get older to keep the muscle tissue and fibers, and they start to dissolve as you age. So as long as I get cardio in, I'm generally pretty happy. I could, you know, I do weights, but I could care less if I miss it on a certain day. But I generally don't often.
Okay. And in terms of diet, are you fairly strict with what you allow yourself to eat?
Yes. Yeah. I'm very regimented. I've done a few videos, I think, in the past, but I was a lot heavier before, back in 2016. And then I kind of buttoned it up a little bit and figured out a way that I could eat. And so for probably 3 years, I tracked everything I ate, and I would weigh things and I'd get things set. And I can't really tell you what made that click in my head. It was just like, if I do something, I'm pretty linearly, I focus on it very, very hard. Anything I do, it's like, it's just a passion. And so I really just scoped that out. And since then, it's just kind of become routine. I know exactly where my numbers are for the end of the day, is proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. And I keep it in a window most every day. And I'll, once every 2 weeks or so, I'll have a date night with my wife where there's just, you know, lots of beer, lots of food, just tons of, you know, just all the stuff. But any other day, like I'm very strict.
Yeah. I guess you have to be to maintain that physique, right?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's something for sure that it's not a passive thing, I don't think, yeah. Right? I make sure I have enough protein each day. And generally I keep myself full by eating tons of greens, tons mm-hmm. of cruciferous greens, tons of broccoli, tons of, you know, just lettuce, celery, things that are light, low calories that go a long distance. And so that's like the bulk of where my food consumption comes from, is going to be vegetables. And then I just make sure I get a certain amount of protein each day. And from what I've read and gleaned, it's like anywhere from, you know, it's like 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight if you're trying to, you know, stay or gain muscle. So I just make sure I'm in those numbers. And then the rest of it, I just fill with greens, basically. I don't have, you know, any other, you know, junk food during the week, so to speak.
Okay. So, if you, let's say, met someone who maybe just watched your videos and then they said, well, you know what, I really want to exercise, but I struggle to motivate myself to get up and to go and do it. Mm-hmm. But I know I want to do it. How would you advise someone to kind of get out of that rut? What would kind of the next move be going forward?
I would say the big thing for me is find a secondary objective you want to do in addition to the workout that gives you a carrot. And so for me, like one of the things, I'm in a good routine now, but one of the things I'm excited about when I wake up is I listen to a lot of audiobooks, but I only allow myself to listen to them if I'm on the trainer. And so like a lot of it's historical fiction, things like that. I'm almost done with by Bernard Cornwell, the Arthur trilogy. So I'm on Excalibur right now. And so I basically am like, if I get to a good part or there's like a great scene or an action scene and it ends, I'm like, dang, you know, and then I know the next morning I'm going to continue that. So I think a big part of it is finding something else aside from just, I know it's a very macho culture and like fitness is like embrace the suck, embrace the suffer. But for me, it's like find something else that gets you there besides the suck and the suffer, and then let it become a routine. So I think that's one of the big things for me is just find another reason that gets you up early, that because if you just like, I want to be fit, I want to be healthy, that's not necessarily motivation to get out of your bed. And then the other thing too is I know if I get home at 5:30, I might have 30, 40 minutes to play video games before the kids wake up. So that's like another window that I have in order to try and make that. So just find like an alternative thing in addition to just the fitness, I think, because most diets fail, right? No, most fitness regimens fail, but there's other things people are more excited about that if you can kind of pair it in tandem with that, it may help you to get past that hump.
Yeah, at least that initial hump to the point where you can build some momentum, right? Yeah. So speaking of video games, I play video games myself, and sure. I view it as a form of leisure. To me, it's no different to watching television. Although I think if I had to make an argument, I'd say it's probably more of an active participation than mm-hmm. watching television. So in some sense, it requires more from you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, all things have limits. And a guy sitting for 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours right. a day just playing video games, that's obviously a problem. But nobody's arguing for that. But prior to our conversation, I actually asked on my community post, I did a poll and I asked everybody, you know, video games are, what do you think, a legitimate form of leisure or a waste of time? And something upward of 70% said it's a legitimate form of leisure. And the general tenor was, yes, you'd rather spend that time learning an instrument or doing something else. But if you're going to just embrace leisure and just relax and not try to actively grow in some way, then it's probably better than just sitting and binge watching a series or something. I want to bring that to this conversation now. and kind of ask you, if somebody said to you, you know, video games are for kids, there's no value in video games, how would you respond to that?
I mean, I would not to be combative with them, but I'd be like, I think a lot of people who do that, and I don't want to hate, I'm just against like the bro culture, I guess. I'd be like, do you play fantasy football? Right? Like, how many hours do you spend doing that? What other things? Do you watch golf? Do you watch sports? Like, that to me, you know, there's other things that I think are less interactive than games. And I think that gaming is a way where you can, you know, a lot of them, they have, and this isn't the reason I play, but a lot of them have fun problem solving elements, right? The new Zelda games that just came out, the previous one, you know, light parts in God of War and stuff. But I think that it creates a better, more fulfilling use of time than just passively watching someone else's content. Obviously, the developers have created it, so it proceeds in a way where there's like a story, but there are choices. There are things you can do. There is a fun growth pattern. There's I think you get more emotionally connected in characters as well. I know I certainly did with the Witcher games and the God of War games. Like, you have that good connection. And I think that, you know, they can tell a really good story. So it's just interactive fantasy, right? It's no different than reading a book, except you get to choose the outcomes and the characters. And it's a fun way to just disengage from the world, because I think there's a lot of people that aren't as thrilled at the 9-to-5 all the time. And whatever your method of escape for enjoyment or leisure is, I think that's a good potential one. All things in moderation, of course, you know. It's not the most conducive to like a healthy long lifestyle if you do it for long periods of time, but I think it's better than TV in that way. I would 100% agree with that.
What's a game you've recently played that you really loved?
I just finished Ragnarok, so that was great. God of War Ragnarok, that was a fantastic game, and I think being a father too, that one, you know, it just strikes to home a little bit more, just having that camaraderie with your son in the game. I think that was just a deeper feeling there. Prior to that, let's see here, what are some of the other ones that I finished up? I mean, it takes me a long time to beat the games as well, yeah, because I have a limited window. So I probably just beat I wanted to beat the previous Zelda game before this came out. So I just finished that one like a couple weeks ago, finally, because that game is just like, you can spend an hour in that game and not do anything. And it's like, I didn't progress the story at all. That's the one there. And those are the biggest ones. God of War is the most recent one for sure. And then I'm going to get Survival Jedi Fallen Order soon. Then the new Zelda one sometime soon as well.
Okay, cool, man. I'm quite looking forward to the new Bethesda game. I think it's, I can't believe I'm forgetting it now. Starfield?
In outer space. Yeah, but there's been no like that I've seen there. I haven't even seen like a screenshot from the in-game. It's like, it's just so.
There is a gameplay trailer on YouTube, okay, so you can see gameplay. But other than that, there hasn't been much. I think a lot of it's speculation. But they did an announcement, and if it's half as good as it promises to be, I think it's going to be amazing. But yeah. But yeah, at the moment I'm playing No Man's Sky, which I'm quite enjoying. Go for it.
No, it's all right. I played No Man's Sky for a bit, but it was so overwhelming to get started. I was like, oh my goodness gracious, like trying to get that, trying to get over that hump. And it's like, you get the materials to take off, and then it's like, you land, it's like, you need more stuff, more fuel. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's probably on the higher end of what I have time for. I think that I can't necessarily invest as much into a game like that. It's more of a linear-ish type game where you're going to have a little more direction.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a fantasy fan are you? I'm just curious.
I mean, it's the of the passions and hobbies that I have, that's the highest one, right? Any of the things that I've done, it all kind of revolves around that. I like historical fiction as well. you know, I read a lot of those books, but I don't read a lot of fantasy, high fantasy books. So most of the stuff is done through gaming, through television, you know, whatever those series may be, Game of Thrones, etc. And so, but that's my favorite. If I were to break it down, if you know, medieval RPG type game comes out, then that's the one I'm most interested in, for sure. Any of the Elder Scrolls, ever, all of that. I tried the online, but again, that's a little overwhelming time wise in order to make progression. And I just don't necessarily feel like I have enough time to invest in an actual online MMORPG at this moment.
Yeah. Do you have a struggle with that kind of feeling of guilt that can come when you do have a job and you do have all these responsibilities? I know a lot of guys who work and then play games, they'll often talk about this sense of guilt, like, man, I really should be doing something else right now. And it almost stops them from playing. Do you ever feel that?
Generally not, because again, it's like maybe 30 minutes a day. That's what I get. Okay. And that's only from like 5:30 to 6 in the morning. The only time I had a big binge was my one friend when the new when Elden Ring came out. Basically, my wife said, feel free to take a weekend and just play. And so I literally went to his house. We set up two TVs and we played from Friday to Monday, Friday to like Sunday. I think we played or Monday, like 55 hours or something like that. We just did not sleep. We just play, like, and wow. So like, 'cause my favorite, like, of the more recent ones, and I can't believe I forgot Elden Ring, but all the Souls games I've played to the nth degree, even with Demon Souls when it first came over and it was really not well known. I played through that one. I was like, what is this game? This is madness. And I just kind of fell in love with it. And then all the Dark Souls game and Elden Ring was just, I that was like, I don't take much time away, but that was a fun thing. But any other time, I know that from like 3 to 6, it's just my time, right? I'm sacrificing sleep to do it. And so then when it's done, if I get home, like, there's just, with the three kids, there's no opportunity. Like, I'll play Mario Party sometimes, like the oldest one, 6, I'll give him a control, and the other two, I give like an not plugged in control. So it's perfect because it's 4 players. But anytime I'm home, there's not going to be a moment of silence. It's impossible.
Yes. Yeah. I don't have 3 kids, but I just with one, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you mentioned fantasy and you mentioned Lord of the Rings earlier. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is just, what is your favorite fantasy world? Is it Middle Earth?
It's actually the fantasy world from the Witcher. I think there's nothing that I invested more into, like, emotionally in a game than The Witcher 3. And even like with the DLC on that game, like, those were some of the best Blood and Stone, Blood and Wine, Hearts of Stone. Like, those were some of the best pieces of gaming I've ever played. And I was so distraught when it was all over. I came late, but I bought all the books and I read all the books. Went back, I played all the they had the Thronebreaker game. I don't know if you ever saw that one, where it was like a Gwent game where you controlled a character, you could get resources and stuff, and the battles were fought by playing Gwent. It was just the one that I loved the most. And I think this is a little cheesy, but I think that Yennefer is very much reminds me of my wife, just like a boss, you know. I love that in a female character, just no F's given and just a rock star. And so I think that was the other part of it. I just loved the characters, and that's the one that I enjoyed the most. I fell in love with the most.
Yeah, I love the grittiness of the world. And I think this is a common critique of Tolkien and Middle Earth, is that, and I actually don't think it's a problem, but the characters are very heroic in the sense that, especially in the books, they are true heroes. Game of Thrones, things are a little bit more humanized. They're less idealistic. And in The Witcher, it's in some instances, it's almost worse than that. Like, you'll make a choice in the game and you think this is the right moral choice. And then the game completely flips it and you realize, I'm a monster. I've just done the worst possible thing. And there's something nice about that, that the brutality of that world, if I could say it that way. Is that something that you enjoy about the Witcher games, apart from the mechanics?
I think it's great because you have real consequences to actions. Like I think the Bloody Baron quest, right? One of the first ones where you have to take the baby or whatever, and it ends and there's that cut scene. And I got like the worst one, you know, it's like the wife died, the guy killed himself. And I was like, oh my gosh, I thought I was doing the right thing. But I think that's a great way to storytell. Because I think that it's so often like in a fetch quest or anything, you basically, it's like go to A to B and then you get the dialogue tree, good choice, bad choice. Okay, I'm picking the good choice, I'm the hero. But in games like that, it kind of explores a little bit more of the complexity of the interaction that people have and how you may be helping one person is actually making things worse for another person. You choose to bring the wife back to the Baron and that makes things worse for everyone. You choose to say no, and he does this. And I think that it adds a little bit more tangible weight to decisions where everything is fleshed out more in a way where you can't just do the cookie cutter thing.
Yeah. A consequence has to matter. I'm a big lover of board games. You can't see them in the shelf, but I've got a big bookshelf just full of board games. And to me, there's nothing worse than when you're playing a board game with somebody and they say, you know what, I don't even care, this is just a game, like I don't care. There's nothing worse than that. There has to be a sense of consequence, and to me a play is something that you do it for its own sake. This kind of speaker Alan Watts had this line that the point of listening to a song is not to get to the end of the song. Otherwise, the best orchestras would be the ones that played the fastest. The point of the song is found in each moment of the song. The point of the song is the song. In the same way, the point of the game, you have to see the consequence within it. If you just constantly go, oh, this is just pointless, you'll never be invested in anything. And I think just to come back, the Witcher games, you sort of mentioned it, they imbue everything with this, with consequence. And that is actually what makes it gripping. And the less grounded it feels, the more on the surface, the more superficial, what's the point of emotionally investing, right?
Right, yeah.
So I want to switch over now to a topic that's very dear to my heart because it's a new topic for me, which is fatherhood. So my daughter's just over a year old now, and it's been a crazy year. You mentioned ripping off the Band-Aid, having three children, one after the other. When you said that, I just, my respect for you just went up because I know just from having one how challenging that is. But it's beautiful and it's amazing. And I think for all the times parents kind of jokingly complain about how challenging children are, I think we only do that because if we just spoke about how much joy they bring us, we'd probably drive people crazy. Yeah. But what I wanted to ask you is, and this is such a broad question, but I think these are the best questions to ask, but how did becoming a father change you?
I think that I don't know if it necessarily changed me. It just brought out the best parts of what I could be, I guess I could say, because in general, let's say, for example, if I were to say good qualities, I'm extremely patient, very loyal and everything. And so when the children came, that just brought that out further, right? I think it just doubled down on my patience, on my empathy, on my love. And so it made me just happier, right? I guess that's the way I could say it is. I think that I in general is just someone, I'm often content with life, right? I don't have like any, I'm just not an unhappy person. But I think that the more you interact with your kids and spend time, the more you realize how much life is more full with them. And so I would say that it's made me just more grateful for everything and more happy about life in general. And it's like, I think it gives you that extra cushion where I think that even though kids give you a hard time, if you have a rough day at work or whatever. There's nothing that's going to, even, you know, and I love my wife more than anything in this world, but if you come home and your kids run and give you a hug, like all that other stuff just washes away, right? It just grounds your perspective in what's important in the world and makes any of the bad times easier, because you have that to look forward to, and it gives you that drive and that reason to want to be a better person, provider, whatever, because it's like you have a focal point as to where your energy needs to go.
Yeah. And it's such a clear focal point. It's so, it's so obvious and undeniable to you that this is where, this is the end goal for all your efforts, all your early mornings, all your hard work, all your, whatever you're doing for your day job, you have a very clear end point. And it's, to maybe use an archery metaphor, it's a very clear target, and you know when you've missed it, and you know when you're closer to it, and you know when you've hit it. Yeah, great answer. I would agree completely. It's not like you, once the child is born, like you suddenly, like you do change, but it's not that you're a different person. It's just that you realize the weight of the responsibility becomes so real that it requires you to pull on parts of yourself that maybe you haven't as much, and you have to kind of bring that more forward. And I think especially the kind of the self-sacrifice to me has been the biggest, because you know, sometimes I'll speak with people and they'll say things like, do you miss the free time, or do you miss you know, having spontaneity, being able to just leave the house when you want, which you can still do. It just, you'll know, it just takes a lot longer because there's
and a lot of planning. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There's tons of it. Becoming a parent turns you into an amazing planner. But what I realized is that those things that you might miss, you know, for a moment, they're very superficial. Like, oh, I miss being able to sit down and watch a series without, you know, something bothering me. Oh, I miss being able to just like get up and go to a restaurant whenever I want to. The things that you miss don't, and you get those things back, by the way, eventually. I mean, you can eventually, you get that freedom back, but you what you will miss is if you didn't have that little light there at the end of the day when you get home. So kind of building on that question, Dash, thanks for your answer. Lovely to hear that. You're obviously three kids in. Looking back at yourself when you were younger and you had just become a father, if you could have a kind of portal through time to your younger self, and when he just became a dad, what advice would you give to that guy?
Try to remember all the stages, because even if they're close together, you forget it. It's like you have the first child and it's like, okay, what's happening? He's extra fussy. Well, he's a year and a half or two. Okay, molars are coming in. Okay, this and this, right? And then you get past that, you move to that next stage. When the new child comes, you tend to forget a lot, even if they're really close together. And it's like just trying to keep that remembrance of, all right, this is what we need to do. These are the stages. This is this. I think that thankfully I've been able to be to where the point I don't have regrets in not being present, right? I think that's the one thing my wife and I talk about, is because my wife is an empire builder. You know, we both work in real estate, by the way. And she's a mover and a shaker, and she's an empire builder. And she is like driven to create. And I'm like, we have this conversation frequently, and we're in a position in our lives where we've been fortunate. We've worked hard to have enough to not, you know, want, and we have the opportunity of time. And so with that time, it's often that it's like, okay, we got to do this. We got to, you know, we got to build. And, you know, we talk about it. And the one thing we have, you know, we're friends with people that are older. The one thing that everyone has always said is, I wish I would have spent more time with my kids when they were younger. Bar none, right? Everybody says that. And that's a conversation we have frequently. And every time we have it, it's like, you know what? This is it. They are small for one time. You know, money can be made. You know, if you've put yourself in a position to be able to spend more time with your kids, use what you have now and then build that empire when they get older, when they go to high school, when they don't want to deal with you, right? There's going to be a time where they grow up and they go on their own, but it's only one time where they are going to jump on you when you come in the house. They are going to just be constantly asking you to play. And even that can be exhausting. But I think that that's one thing I've been fortunate in, is that I've been able to try to relish the moments all the time. And I think that's just the one staple that I have. I just never want to have a regret that I didn't take the opportunity to spend that with them when I had them.
Yeah. I like what you said about money can always be made later, but that those moments when they're young, it really is only once. Like I heard the other day, you don't actually know when the last time you're going to bounce your child on your knee is. There's going to be a lost time, but you don't know when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of taking the other side of the coin now, what's the most challenging thing about being a father for you?
I think it's being able to observe your children, to raise them in the way that is best for them. Because having three, you know, you think one approach works for the first one. Our child, our firstborn, is a certain way. Our second one is completely different. And our third one is 100% different. And I think the most challenging thing is just is making sure you're constantly observant to their habits, how they're reacting to you, how they react to certain things, and not trying to do a one size fits all for each kid. Because a way to, you know, as long as it's within the fairness and equality, right? You know, it's not like where one kid gets this toy and then they're going to get the better one because they cry it harder. It's like you want to be sure that the way that you engage with them, they're responsive to. And so I think that's the hardest thing, is being able to find those things and having the patience to figure out what works. So for an example, our second son, he has a really hard time getting overwhelmed sometimes, right? Just emotionally. Oh, and so for him, I've learned if I sit down with him and I just put my hands out, he'll grab my hands and he'll be able to like take a calming breath, right? I'm like, okay, let's talk this through. Let's breathe it out, right? The youngest one, he's just kind of right now, you know, I love him to death, but he's a little thug. You know, he's the youngest son. So he's going to be the one, like if there's going to be anyone in the family that protects the brothers, it's going to be the baby. He's crazy. But he responds very differently to certain things. I can't sit down with him to calm him necessarily. He doesn't respond in that way. And the oldest one is different as well. So I think it's the big part of making sure you're trying enough to figure out how you can best help them to figure out who they need to be, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that makes sense. Seeing them each is unique because they're each radically different. Something that shocked me when I became a dad is how much of the personality is there from the beginning. You know, right? I used to think maybe people are blank slates kind of, and then they get etched by life, and they do get etched by life to a degree, but it's shocking how much is there. And so each child is, and I'm saying this like I've had multiple children, but with my child, I've noticed there's a specific way I have to handle her that if another parent tried to handle her the way they handle their kids, it's just not going to work. Even, and this is maybe a touchy point, but even like, sometimes grandparents will try and handle the baby in a different way, and you'll know as their parent that that's not how they're necessarily going to respond. So, but you're also learning, right? So finding that out, I can definitely agree. That's definitely challenging, and it's going to get more challenging, especially as my daughter gets older. So just to kind of end on a slightly higher note, what do you? I think you've kind of already answered this question, but what do you enjoy most about being a father?
I enjoy being able to share experiences with them for the first time. Again, I mean, it's like our oldest, we took him to Disneyland when he was three. And he was very into Mickey and Disney at that point. And being able to see that wonderment again through their eyes is amazing. Being able to be, because he's not going to remember that trip, you know, there's no way, it's gone, they're young, but the trips are for the parents at that point. You're being able to experience that with them and be a part of them as they figure out the world and they get to see things for the first time and get excited about things. And I think that it helps to reconnect you to that childlike wonderment, right? I think it brings you back a little bit, because as you get older, I think some people can get jaded with the world or the way things work, but being able to experience those things again with your kid is a great way just to have moments with them, and also be able to bring it back a little bit as well, and just kind of experience that childlike wonderment for the world again, and for the things that exist that just seem natural or commonplace.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you feel like, because of your interest in video games and your love of medieval history and history in general, do you think that that's going to make it easier for you to relate to them as they grow up?
I'd hope so, but it all depends on what they want to be, where their interests lie. And I think the one thing that I'm trying to, again, stay most cognizant of is, as a trait, I'm an observer in general. I don't talk much. I tend to observe when I'm with people, and I just want to be with them as they find their direction. And I'll take an interest in whatever they take an interest in, because I tend to focus very deeply on something. And so if something is very important to my son, whether it be archery or whether it be chess or whether it be building robots, you know, anything, I want to make sure that I take time to invest in that with them, because I can, you know, there's passion to be found in anything, right? There's interest to be found in anything. And if they are excited about it, then I'm going to try and share that with them, if they'll have me, of course, right? Because, you know, yeah. Sometimes the kids are just like, Dad, no. But I want to try and adapt with them. So obviously they'll see what I love by what I do, and they'll play with me. And then if they find something else that they love, I want to try and invest in that with them to have something together.
Yeah. A big focal point on my channel and the work I'm doing on the channel is this, British author, G.K. Chesterton. And he said that there are no uninteresting things, just uninterested people. Mm-hmm. And he had another quote that was similar, which is that the world will never starve for wonders, but will starve for wonder. And that, to me, has been very helpful to know that whatever someone that you care about, whether that be your wife or your kids, whatever they get interested in, if you think it's boring, you probably just don't understand it well enough yet. Or you haven't taken the time to try and see what they see in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And having that understanding is nice, because it kind of unlocks the world to you. There is no boring topic. Even something that might to someone sound boring, like I'll just randomly think of economics. If you really get into it, it's fascinating. And I think that's true for pretty much everything. I don't think there's really something that's completely boring. Even paint drying, if you analyze the process, it's probably a little bit interesting. So, Dash, thank you so much for your time today. It was really lovely speaking with you. I always end things by just giving the other person a chance to plug anything you'd like. So if someone is watching this and they really like listening to you and they want to see more of your content, where should they go? What should they do?
I'm on Instagram, TikTok, Garnish and Gains. I don't really have anything to plug. Just look at the social media stuff. If you guys like nerdy medieval fantasy stuff, feel free to check it out. Sorry. I don't have a promotion set or anything.
No, that's fine. Yeah, so that's pretty much all I needed, just Garnish and Gains. I'll put a link to that in the description for anybody, so they can just click that and take straight to your page. And then, yeah, I just want to say thanks for the work you're doing, man. Like I find your videos very inspiring, like I said at the beginning, very, very hopeful and a positive voice on the internet sphere and on TikTok, which is nice to see. And just thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It was great talking to you, man.